Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. The tank is almost over. Two games left for the Bulls players that haven't been shut down. Tonight, they're in Brooklyn taking on the Brooklyn Nets. Bulls pregame live crew begins collecting hazard pay at 6. Neil and Stacey have the call at 6:30. It's a snow day in Chicago. One side of town got the day off. The other side had a delay. No home opener for the Cubs. It's postponed until tomorrow. Will Anthony Rizzo play? How long will his back problem linger? Meanwhile, the White Sox played ball but were frozen out in the ninth. Despite the loss, will they be better than we thought in year two of their rebuild? And for the first time in almost a decade, Blackhawks are cleaning out their lockers before the start of the NHL playoffs. Can this franchise turn things around in a hurry? Will Jonathan Toews regain the form that helped lead the franchise to 3 cups? And is next year a make or break season for Stan and Coach Q? And welcome in to Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Boy, voices in my head always saying funny things. I'm David Kaplan. Let's meet the panel for today's show. Wow.
Sounds inappropriate. Please share.
It was. It's Tom Cooper, and it was. He's Phil Rogers, MLB.com. He is Adam John, Chicago Sun-Times, and the brainchild of the burgeoning empire known as The Athletic. He is the great John Greenberg. All right, Cubs home opener was snowed out today at Wrigley Field. It was snowing hard all morning long, and around 11 o'clock, they pulled the plug because they have a day off tomorrow. Surprised that they didn't wait it out?
No, that's why you build in the off day after the opener. The forecast tomorrow is better than the forecast today. It was completely different circumstances for the Cubs and the White Sox, who have Tampa Bay in town for the only time all year, no off days built in. So under that circumstance, you try to play. If anything, I was surprised they didn't make this decision earlier in the day.
Yeah, it made too much sense. You have the off day, and tomorrow's what's supposed to be 45. That's big guy shorts weather. So everybody would be a lot more comfortable out of Wrigley.
Now, my son is in from Pittsburgh. He lives there, Cubs
Lucky
fan.
Guy.
Came in for opening day, and he has to go back to work, so he leaves at 6 a.m., he has to miss the opener now.
Well, guess what? He can go to the games in Pittsburgh and sit anywhere he wants.
A lot easier to get a ticket.
Yeah, sit wherever he wants. I was there today, and I was like, why on earth would they try to play in this? The outfield's covered in snow. It's slick. I was talking to Pedro Strop on my way out of the clubhouse, and he's like, it'd been great for me because I could busting guys in on the hands.
Yeah.
He's like, but it's dangerous out there.
So the White Sox were able to play, and it looked like there was a pretty decent amount of snow on the field there as well.
Well, I believe Roger Bossert, I don't know how he estimates these things, but he estimated that they moved like 300 tons of snow off the field.
Seems a little bit of a reach.
Perhaps hyperbolic.
Stuff too.
But he said the Cubs got more. He said it was at least like a more, from what he could tell, another inch. And also it's like comparing someone to Roger Bossert, it's like comparing a hitter to like Hank Aaron, right?
Right. Roger Bossert's
like Kyle Schwarber or Hank Aaron. We can't really compare them.
All right, here's our Ankin Law Sports Talk Live poll question. Go to NBCSportsChicago.com/vote. Here's a question for you. Anthony Rizzo, was he the biggest concern? Ian Happ's bat or Kyle Schwarber's bad. He's 0 for his last 14. So I ask you, John Greenberg, biggest concern for the Cubs?
I'd say it's Schwarber's bad more than anything else. I mean, I think Rizzo's back seems like it's something that's always maybe going to need maintenance. Ian Happ is very important, but I mean, if Zobrist is hitting, he'll be leading off more often than Ian Happ.
Yeah, I think the Rizzo back is a bigger concern than the conventional wisdom. You know, He and Chris Bryant, those are your essential food groups on this team. Had they played today, he would have missed 4 out of 10 games. The previous 3 years, he's missed 14 games total. He was on the disabled list with a back injury in 2014. You know, so I don't understand where they take the confidence. Well, he's had these problems before. It's no big deal. You know, to me, he's had these problems before. Oh, my gosh, is it a big deal? You know, I don't – it's kind of hard to picture. They don't really have a backup first baseman. You know, if this does become an extended absence, they haven't had a year where they've had one of those since 2014. So I think that's a big deal.
I get that back injuries can linger, and that's true in all sports. But it is early. It is – snowing outside, so you don't want to risk further injury in that respect. But you look at Schwarber. This is a guy, I mean, how much weight did he cut in the offseason? And it was going to help him in so many aspects. He's got, what, 17 strikeouts? The strikeout rate is already astronomically high, in my opinion. I wonder what's going on with him. It's the mental issues. Like, a back issue could resolve itself. Well, where is Kyle Schwarber mentally, and how long is that going to linger this season?
Yeah, I mean, I don't make any judgments on any. Like, I was in the clubhouse in Milwaukee, and it's easy for people to start, you know, coming up with these narratives 5, 6, 7, 9 games in.
We need him, John.
You wait, right? wait for a month. You know, and we were talking about that with Theo. It's like, wait for a month, see what's up in May. You know, although last year Theo reminded us, we kept pushing it back another month. Last year in the first half, and like, let's wait 2 months. Let's wait till the All-Star break. Things eventually even out.
It is true too with Rizzo. He's 3 for 28. I mean, when he's played, he homered on opening day, but he hasn't really been hitting. But if he's healthy, I mean, we've seen him turn it on a dime. I mean, he did it. The biggest example to me was against the Dodgers in the 2016 championship series.
Yeah, people were going, well, maybe we ought to sit him for a game. You know,
yeah. Right.
I mean, Chris says it was, and then he got red hot.
Matt Caesar's bat,
yeah, and then he wears leggings, too.
Russell wore the leggings. And if you go back to Rizzo after his, would he yell, respect me?
Right.
Since then, it's like 3 for 56 or something crazy like
right.
that.
Correct.
So, the curse of respect me.
All right, so if you look at Ian Happ, any concern that he should not be at the top of the lineup?
This is like the Schwarber conversation all over again, is it not? Well, he's not a prototypical leadoff hitter. I think that's clear to everybody, but I like this guy. Obviously, the fans aren't concerned as much as I am. To me, I would rank him Schwarber, Happ, and then Rizzo's back. I disagree with Phil a little bit because there is time there, but the guy is so talented. Do you think they would find him a spot? It's not leadoff, obviously.
I think if he can play center field adequately to be an everyday type of a center fielder, a guy, and maybe you move him to the left field some like they've done, I think he should be able to handle leadoff. Yes, he strikes out some, but he should draw a lot of walks, you know, and the switch hitter presence is significant, you know, like Dexter Fowler. You're not always, you know, worrying about, you're not switching the lineup around. You got a guy that can fill that role. Both Happ and Schwarber, their strike zone judgment is way better than they show. I don't know how they've gotten out of whack. Like, Schwarber last year was so out of whack taking strikes and swinging at balls. Before these problems set in, these were guys that if they took a pitch, it was pretty much a ball. And if they swung at it, it was pretty much a strike. But somehow they've lost their orientation, their discipline a little bit.
All right, let's move to the White Sox. They lost today at home, falling to the Tampa Bay Rays. Had multiple opportunities, including both the eighth and the ninth inning, and could not find a way to get the job done. John, I was surprised Matt Davidson never came off the bench to pinch hit in the eighth or the ninth. Tim Anderson hits to the left side rather than finding a way to hit the ball to the right side. And the next thing you know, you lose to Tampa at home, and they lost four straight at home.
Yeah, I mean, no one has, like, huge aspirations for the White Sox this year, but you think they'd be playing a little crisper right now to start the season. Obviously, some of these, you know, if they want to use weather as an excuse, they've had
cold.
Some pretty cold games.
No question.
Three or four in a row. But, yeah, I would like to see a little bit better baseball from them. This isn't last year. This isn't the Cubs of 2013 or 2012 where there's no talent. There's talent on this team. It's not going to be a playoff team, but you think it's a team that could win in the high 70s.
Looking at me, talk about the White Sox. I'm in draft coverage here. I was surprised there was 200 people out there today. That's how I felt for the fans, and I felt for the pitchers. Every time they threw the ball back to the mound, they are blowing on their fingers. It just seems miserable. You're right. The weather is part of their problems right now. I mean, it's been miserable in Chicago in the early going here for spring.
Today, John mentioned Matt Davidson, also Wellington Castillo out of the lineup today. So they DH'd Saladino, who had a good game in the past against Chris Archer. So in the very small sample size, they decided to take a shot with Saladino. It didn't work out. You know, I when the Sox came out and won those first two games in Kansas City, I was feeling like, yeah, maybe you were a wet blanket. Because this is what I've been saying all along, is that, you know, too much experience went out the door with all those trades they made last year. You don't lose all those guys and then, because you've got this young enthusiasm and Rick Renteria has them playing right, All of a sudden, you don't win in the major leagues based on that, especially with so much young pitching. I mean, you gotta let these guys get their feet wet, and this is a year, really, to kind of get your feet wet. And for a lot of guys like Lourie Garcia, Yolmer Sanchez, I mean, these are opportunities that you got to take because you got these guys coming behind you in the minor leagues. This is some guy's chance. I mean, you know, and we saw the Cubs go through it, and it's painful at times to watch. And interesting, I mean, we can talk about Michael Kopech makes his first start in the minor leagues, probably get as much attention paid to that as there will be to this loss against Tampa Bay.
It's the same
Bay
thing
today.
When Chris Bryant was playing in the minors. Watching MILB TV, not the big league club.
Well,
yeah, I get it.
When last year the White Sox would always have a minor league game on in their suite where the GM and everyone, Jerry sits, and Jerry would come back and try to see what's going on. They said they would always have it on the best game for them, so they look good.
And you know that you can watch the Charlotte Knights right here on NBC Sports Chicago throughout the season, so you get to see some of the top prospects like Eloy Jimenez and Michael Kopech. All right, Blackhawks, one goal. We'll have to wait till next year. There will be no playoff hockey at the United Center for the first time since 2008. They're not back in the playoffs next year. Are Stan Bowman and Joel Quenneville gonzo?
Whether you're on the go or stuck at work late, don't miss a second of your Chicago Bulls. All NBC Sports Chicago games, including pre- and post-games, can be live-streamed on the NBC Sports app. Wherever you are, you're there.
I think the emotion would be extreme disappointment in where we're at as an organization. We have high expectations, and we know we didn't meet those this year.
I think management, coaches, pretty much everyone in this organization doesn't accept the fact of the position we're in this year.
I think every individual on our team, outside of maybe two or three, we can say that we'd expect more for their personal contribution to our team's success.
All right, there is the Blackhawks management team and their star player, Patrick Kane, after the Hawks concluded their season and they are not going to be playing playoff hockey. What's your take on where this organization is and how quickly it can get back in the hunt?
That's a great question. I mean, they have young talent. It's not like this is a has-been team where everyone's, you know, 30 years old or over. They do have a lot of young, fast talent. I don't know how well it meshes with some of the older guys. The question I have with it is, like, let's say they don't get better next year. Who is the person that you trust in the front office to hire a new hockey executive to run things? Because they haven't had to do it. They've promoted Stan from within.
Correct.
And that was obviously his dad. You know, his dad is around too. So I don't know, like, even how they would make the change. I could see Quenneville going, but who's better? Who's a better coach than Quenneville out there?
Yeah, Nobody.
I think it's actually a smart move that they brought everybody back. I think there's a level of overreaction of what happened with the Hawks last year. A year ago, they were tops in the Western Conference. Yes, they lost in the first round to the Nashville Predators, but you know what? The Predators, they're a lot better than the number 8 seed. Look at them this year. They just won the President's Trophy, so you saw a team on the rise. Don't underestimate the loss of Corey Crawford this year. It changed everything about this team. He's one of your best players. It changes your defense.
Okay,
go ahead.
But currently as constructed, how are they going to be better next year? The blue line is not good. They keep re-signing all the guys that they have. Stan made a horrific trade sending Jalmerson to Arizona for Connor Murphy. For me, it's more on Stan than it is on Joel.
Yeah, because of the personnel moves. Look, even the Brandon Saad trade looks awful. I mean, Artemi Panarin is a point per game player for the Columbus Blue Jackets. So you hope for some of your young players to continue to emerge. And look, guys like Jonathan Toews and Duncan Keith can bounce back. They're not over 35, over 40 veterans. These guys are still, I mean, Jonathan Toews isn't even 30 yet. Duncan Keith, it's not too far removed from a couple Norris trophies. These guys can rebound. You just got to give them time. They've had a lot of hockey over this past decade.
Here's Jonathan Toews today when he met the media.
There's definitely things that weaknesses in your game that you have to work on, that you have to get better at, but also even the parts that maybe come naturally and are your strengths, you got to still work on those too. I think across the board, I mean, you look at our division, how it flip-flopped this year, everyone was good. You're not getting any easy games. There's so many great young players that come in so physically prepared every year. So it's up to you to kind of, again, acknowledge what you do well and build off that, but also assess some of the weaknesses that kind of develop with the game changing as much as it has.
A lot of negative Nancys out there on the Ankenlot poll question. Jeez. You got 53% of you or thereabouts saying they're going to miss the playoffs. What's your take on where this whole thing's headed?
Well, I think Adam makes a good point about the Crawford injury. I mean, you know, they went through that period. Will he come back? Will he not come back? You know, I think having whether it's Crawford, you'd assume it's Crawford's going to get healthy and be back there. I think that's key question for next year going forward. There's so much churn of personnel on all the teams in the NHL. I think it's kind of silly to sit here and try to talk about it now because we don't know the changes that they're going to make. You know, we've seen the core, which was a great core. I mean, we've seen these guys age and diminish a little bit over time. You know, like Jonathan Toews this year. I watched a lot of games and I kept looking for Jonathan Toews. It just didn't seem like, you know, I'd look after the game, you see he was on the ice for 30 minutes, but I never really saw him.
And doesn't and look so, like the same guy.
I mean, you know, I think we're maybe trying to put time in a bottle to try to get this team back to where it was. And, I think there does come a time when you have to celebrate this great run that they had. And then, you know, unfortunately, I think, like with all the top contracts, you know, with Toews and Kane, Duncan Keith. I mean, I think there's still guys that, you know, the core guys are going to be there, but they're not going to be at their
peak efficiency.
Exactly. I think this could be a good thing for the Hawks. I don't want to put a completely positive spin on it. They were really bad this year, but you've seen other teams reinvent themselves. The Penguins, the perfect example. They have Sidney Crosby. Yeah, the Kings had to. The Boston Bruins are doing it right now. You have to reinvent yourself sometimes. And the Penguins are a perfect example because you have these guys who have big contracts, and Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby, and you have to figure out your roster again. You have to bring in your talent.
Can Stan do that? And that's the question.
Yeah.
I mean, he's had some moves we thought were good before, these trades and these signings pulling out of his hat, but he's in a little bit of a cold streak right now.
But the bringing back the old 2010 you know, Hawks getting the band back together. I don't know if that's the best course of action. Right. You know, but if Dustin Byfuglien wants to come back, I think that, speaking of narratives, that'd be fun.
If they miss the playoffs next year, do they fire both Q and Stan or one or the other?
I would say probably both. Yeah. But I don't, like I said, I don't know who hires the next GM of the Hawks. I mean, obviously John McDonough would do it, but how, you know, like who's
right.
the person
who's
in response
advising for? Him on what to do?
Exactly. Well, you would think at this point, though, he's been in the NHL for over a decade now. He's made contacts. He has his
right.
own you would resources.
Assume.
Yeah,
but you
would
still
have.
Think it would be a hockey person making that hire?
Well, he's the top hockey guy in a sense, right? It's him.
In a
and
sense,
Stan, yes.
Or does Rocky obviously has his connections
yes.
being who
the
he
works.
Is?
Or do you hire
right.
a president of hockey operations and that person hires the GM.
Who hires the president of
hockey operations?
Though.
So everything starts and ends in John McDonough's deck. So do you have confidence that he can do it? Yeah, I mean, he's been the president of three Stanley Cup winning teams.
Would he hire Lou Piniella? Go back to his old ones.
There you go. Maybe he'll hire Edzo. All right. Blackhawks season officially ended today as they met the media. Tonight at 10:30, join Pat Boyle, Jamal Mayers, Stevie Conroy as they look forward to the offseason and next year. Hear from Stan Bowman, Coach Q, Toews, Kane, Seabrook, Keith, Sharp, and a host of others on NBC Sports Chicago, all starting tonight at 10:30. For the fourth straight year, a first-time major puts on the green jacket. Patrick Reed wins the Masters, holding off Ricky Fowler and Jordan Spieth. Meanwhile, Tiger Woods not make a charge, but should we expect him to win another major now?
So, you call yourself a Blackhawks fan? NBC Sports Chicago wants to hear from you. Visit NBCSportsChicago.com/BlackhawksAF and tell us what makes you the biggest Hawks fan. You could win the chance to be recognized as our Blackhawks authentic fan of the game, including tickets to a game, a behind-the-scenes tour, be shown on TV, and much more. NBCSportsChicago.com/BlackhawksAF.
Back with the great clip of the week presented by our friends at Great Clips. We go to the Masters. Arlington Heights native Doug Gibb, the low amateur, made the cut and finished his tournament in style, holing out from the bunker on the 72nd hole. He finished tied for 50th at 8 over, but gets the great clip of the week. Meanwhile, here's your winner. The crowd wasn't too thrilled, nor were the other golfers. But Patrick Reed is your champion. Captain America, based on his Ryder Cup play,
wins his first major, gets the green jacket by one shot over Ricky Fowler, two over Jordan Spieth. Look, the stories that we've been hearing all day about this guy, he's not well-liked. Nobody was rooting for him, but you can't take anything away from the fact he played his tail off.
And the stories are old stories, too.
Right. No one knew anything about it.
Right.
No one cared.
Right. Yeah. No, nobody cared.
I mean, they were – he was known when he came into the pro ranks, and he had this reputation that followed him from his success in the NCAA at two different schools. Watching him, like, he showed no emotion on the course. He hit the ball on 13 that seemingly went into the creek in front of the green, which looked to me like the one bad shot he hit. But if you watch this expression – it was just the same as all on the others with that little short follow-through on the irons. It looked like he hit it perfect. And afterwards he said, yeah, I knew I didn't hit it. I thought it was going to go in. I saw it all the way where it landed on the creek, on the bank, and didn't roll back in. I was impressed with his concentration and his focus. And had he crumbled, it would have been an unbelievable tournament because all those guys were having great days.
Oh, man.
Except for Rory, yeah, that were moving up. But he didn't crumble, so I think you got to give him a lot of credit.
I kind of love that he's a villain. And I know there hasn't been much stuff lately, but I'm looking forward to his next Sports Illustrated feature on him where he starts talking smack about everybody again. I love that there's a bad guy in golf, the Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, all that stuff. A villain helps sell papers. It helps sell a lot of things. I like that he's a bad boy.
I didn't know literally nothing about him. I'm sure I maybe read stuff years ago and just didn't process it. And I was reading the stuff yesterday. I was kind of sad for him. I mean, not sad for winning. I thought he was, like Phil says, incredible what he showed out there. But just the backstory with the family issues and the college stuff and not having any friends.
He was stealing from people in college.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. I feel bad for
cheating, stealing.
It's like you feel bad for him.
Yeah, I do, because obviously there's something wrong. If you're acting like that. I just feel
a jerk.
Well, right, but that's that eventually catches up to you. It's kind of like a sad, almost tragic type story.
It's a little bit like a slimmed down John Daly. John Daly is not the country club guy. And I think so many of the people who follow golf are country club guys. And,
Daly seems like more like to give you money than take it away from you.
He's a big hearted guy, but he's an outsider.
Yeah. Right.
He was a successful guy that came in as an outsider. And there really aren't that many guys. I mean, Lee Very Trevino right. was an outsider when he came in, but there really just aren't that many that are able to do it.
The kid from Arlington Heights, Doug Gim, he was not a country club guy.
No.
Not at all. Fish balls out of the water to be able to play, and he plays at Texas and only amateur to make the cut. A very cool story. We hope to get him in studio here one day. Thanks for listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Remember to watch the show weekdays on CSN and visit csnchicago.com for previous episodes of the podcast and all the latest sports news and highlights.